Do you feel stuck in your life? Stuck in a situation, in a relationship? Things that you can't free yourself. No matter how much you try, no matter how good your intentions are, no matter all your attempts, you just keep being tugged back. What do you do in situations like that? One of the most difficult questions to answer. Because in most cases, someone else can't pull you out of there. Especially if you don't want them to. So what do you do when you're stuck? Please join me in this life-changing conversation. Let go, let God, how to get unstuck and propel yourself forward. Hi, Simon Jacobson here. We'll be speaking about let go, let God, how to get unstuck and propel yourself forward. This program is dedicated in honor of our good friends Clay and Tiffany Groot on the birth of their new baby boy, Avidan Michael Groot. Congratulations. One of the biggest questions and challenges in life is how to get unstuck. Do you feel stuck in your life at times? Do you feel stuck right now? In a situation, in a relationship? Whatever the reason, however you got in there. And whatever you do, with all your attempts, and perhaps even made a little progress, with all the good intentions, you seem to not be able to get out of the rut, out of that place. A very difficult one, because you can't help someone who's not ready to help themselves. So someone else can't just come and pull you out of there. You need to be open to it, but you can be your own worst enemy because you're stuck. It's precisely this the situation. What do they say? You can't change a system. You can't fix a problem from the very system which created the problem. So we need to go outside of the system. And that's what we shall be discussing. And it's very appropriate to this season. We're in the high holiday season. It's all about renewal, hope, change, growth. Those are big words. Everybody would love to have them. But how? The big how. The big question of how. So let's go back to that statement. Why can't you fix a problem from the very system that created the problem? The answer is because that problem is very somewhat part and parcel of that system. A system that creates a problem is not going to be necessarily the same system that can help you fix it, because that's part of the problem. In other words, if you cause the problem, unless something changes in you, that problem will persist. And you see this all the time. You see that vicious cycle of dysfunctional relationships, for example, that repeat themselves and then become even generational. Why? Because it was created in a particular environment, a particular pathology. Let's call it a family unit. And there's no fresh air. So the same air that fed that infection in the first place continues to feed it. Without bringing something new into the picture, we will be products, if not victims of the past. So it's critical that you go outside of the system. What do I mean by the system? Outside of the usual structure, usual routine, which is why one of the simplest advice in any given situation is shake things up, shift something, even something small. Any shift shakes up the existing status quo, the inertia. You know, when things are stuck physically, what do? You shake it up, you try this and that. You don't want to shake it to the point of breaking it, but you want to loosen the resistance. The same thing is psychologically and emotionally. We need to shake it up. We need to shift something. Small shifts in your routine ultimately can break through those stuck situations. But that too is not so easy because, again, it's our habits, it's our routines. How do we suddenly change that? So sometimes it is behavioral. You do something on a behavioral level, and that's what and that helps you break through. Like they say, fake it until you make it. But I titled this class, we titled it, Let Go, Let God. In many ways, God is, maybe not in many ways, in all ways, God is ultimately the solution. But we need to define this word God. See, the God that many of us believe in, or the God that we were exposed to, I should say, is not a real God. It's a crutch. It's a superstition. It's a culture. Its conformity is based on fear. If God is to mean anything, it means something that's outside of our system. You know, Holocaust survivors are often confronted, those that maintain their faith. How could you believe in God after what you saw, after what you experienced? And I heard more than once a Holocaust survivor respond, how could I not believe in God? How could I believe in man? It was man that betrayed us. I have nothing to turn to but God. A young woman who was a victim of a terrorist attack. And I say she suffered severe injuries, told me once that there was a point where she gave up on her life. And then she woke up one morning with this surge of faith, of trust in God. And she said, you don't know how powerful faith and trust is until you have nothing left but that. These are statements that are not coming from some glassy-eyed cult member. It's coming from people who've suffered greatly. What they're essentially saying is, for me to be able to get through this, I need something more than human. Human strength is simply not enough. For them, God, and maybe you don't even need to use the word God. That word itself is a trigger. For them, God, and what we can learn for us, is a reality beyond the structure. A reality that opens up new vistas, new possibilities. That when humanly, that doesn't seem humanly possible. When all options seem closed, yes, stuck, there's something you hold on to. They tell the story of one of the Rebbes, the Blazhener Rebbe, I believe it was. He was in the camps with some of his disciples, some of his students. And you imagine these camps were not just inhumane, they were sadistic, they were horrendous. Besides the death, the torture, the dehumanization, the humiliation. So every camp had its particularly unique sadism. In this camp, the commandant loved to play a game, quote unquote. And what was the game? He had the Jews dig wide trenches. They start playing the music just to add the insult to injury. That's even mild to say it that way. To further torture them. It often happened around holidays to further the torture. They would play the music, and the game began. Whoever can jump over the trench lives. Whoever can't is shot on the spot. So one of the disciples, one of the students of this Blazhener Rebbe says to him, Rebbe, you know, enough is enough. Let's just give our souls, return our souls to our Maker. Let's just give up, die right here, be shot, enough, and end the misery. And the Rebbe said to him, no, as long as we have an ounce of strength, we have still some oxygen in our lungs to breathe. We have to continue to fight. We don't know what the bigger plan is. And the game began. In the havoc, in the mayhem, nobody knew who lived, who didn't live. The camps were liberated a little while later. And lo and behold, in one of the refugee camps, the Rebbe and the Chassid reunite. Both of them, who were there that day when they dug the trenches. They were shocked to see each other. And the student, the disciple, says to his Rebbe, to his teacher, Rebbe, you're not a young man. How did you jump over that trench? The Rebbe said, I closed my eyes and I held on to the coattails, to the kapata, the coattails of my holy father, my holy grandfather, my holy great grandfather, as far back as I can go. And that gave me the strength. And then he turned to his disciple. He said, "You're also not that young. How did you manage to jump over the trench?" He said, "Rebbe, I held on to your coattails." This means going out of the system, reaching to something that holds you up. There's another story they tell of Rav Meir of Primishlan, another Hasidic master, elderly man. He came to a city once for the weekend, for Shabbat, and he wanted to go to the ritual bath, the mikveh. But they told him, there's a mikveh, but nobody goes there in the winter, because in these freezing days and nights, the slopes are slippery, and the mikveh is situated at the bottom of a hill. You really can't get there. It's too dangerous. Well, he insisted, and two of the skeptics followed him to see what's going to happen. And they see, and the slopes were slippery, and both of them slipped, and one of them broke an arm. But the Rebbe walked calmly, without any problem at all, went into the bathhouse, came back for the Shabbat to celebrate. The students were shocked, and they came to him, "Rabbi, we saw what happened. How did you manage? Nobody can walk on those slopes without falling." And he said, I'll say it in Yiddish, "Am es zugebunden eben, fällt man nicht unten." When you're bound above, you don't fall below. When you have something to hold on to, you don't fall below. Like a rope, a lifeline. Consider this. Two people are in a hospital, God forbid. They're suffering from the same illness. One lies in bed, has visitors, friends, relatives, gifts, people encouraging him. And the other lies in his bed, quiet, alone. The word can cause you to shudder. No visitors, no guests, no cards, no hope, no encouragement. And though they have suffering objectively from the same problem, one of them heals. The other one deteriorates. You can guess which. Because when you have others that are encouraging you, it doesn't make the illness less, but it builds up your immunity. This is a physical fact. It builds up the fight in you. It's like people cheering you on, leading you on. Not leading, misleading you. Leading you as in supporting you. The other person lying alone gives up. It's demoralizing. It weakens the spirit. This is all going out of the system. So you can use whatever the word you like. And God, again, I know very well, for many is a dirty word. For some may be neutral. Nobody's really neutral. But for some, they've only seen negative things. God, people tell me, everything about God has only hurt me. About punishment, fear, judgment. But I'm talking about a different God. Like in the story of Levi Yitzchok Berdichev, who said, the God, to a self-proclaimed atheist, "The God you don't believe in, I also don't believe in." Let go, let God is about letting go of human machinations, all our plans, and realizing there's another force outside of the system. And when you hold on to that, you're lifted to that place. So really you manifest that through letting go of your ego, letting go of all your resources. Obviously, you have to do everything possible to free yourself from any situation. But an additional resource, additional to that, is recognizing I've done everything and I let go. I let go of my ego, of my arrogance, of my control. And interestingly, things open up. Because sometimes you are part of the problem. You want the answer so desperately. You grab. Look what drowning victims do. The person who's coming to save them, they grab them. They're so desperate. They bring them down. They could both drown. It's an art to save a drowning person. Because when we're desperate, We become our own worst enemy. As I said before, it's a problem within the system. You need something outside of the system. And that requires that concept, that word that I often discuss, bittul, emptying yourself, freeing yourself, letting go. Letting go of old habits, letting go of the need for control, letting go of the solutions you think are solutions, and opening yourself up to new opportunities, opening the window, fresh air. The exact thing that you may think is not going to help is the thing that needs help because it's new. So to say, I've tried everything. No, you haven't tried everything. You haven't tried something you haven't tried. There's a fellow who came to me, was having difficulty in relationships, dating, serial dating, and never really getting anywhere. He says, Rabbi, I think there's a curse on me. I need you to get rid of the curse. I said, how are you sure it's a curse? Maybe there are other things to try. No, I've tried everything. I said, how do you know you tried everything? Let's go through the things you tried. Maybe there's some things you didn't try. Trust me, I tried everything. So I said to him, let me ask you something. Do you have any blind spots? Without missing a beat. Yes, of course, but I know where they are. I said, then it's not a blind spot. He didn't understand what I was saying. In other words, blind spots, that's exactly why they're blind spots, because they blind you from seeing them. Beautiful concept the Baal Shem Tov teaches. Beautiful, but also tragic. There's a darkness that conceals things. But then there's a darkness that conceals the concealment, a double darkness. Where you think it's light, it's all right. How do you fight that? That's only through real bittul, to recognizing there are things you don't know. There are things you know that you don't know. There are things you don't know you don't know. The things you don't know you don't know, there you have to let go. Obviously, do everything possible based on your knowledge. But then there's that which is outside of the system. And that is indeed the real powerful story of Yom Kippur, Day of Forgiveness, Day of Atonement. That despite the fact that the people had betrayed God, Moses went to beg for forgiveness because he wanted to go outside of the system. Of course the system is one of cause and effect. You put your hand in fire, you get burned. You betray someone, you're not likely to regain their trust that easily, if at all. But if you go out of the system, meaning you are ready to do something that you never did before, and you demonstrate your commitment and love, that yes, I acknowledge the mistake I made. I acknowledge even the deliberate error I made, the deliberate transgression, but I'm ready to go further. I'm ready to go out of my way. I'm ready to love in a deeper way. That, the response to that would be that God also goes out of so-called his comfort zone. So it's going out of your comfort zone. It's going out of that which is part of your routine, which is part of where the problem was created. And that's not difficult to do if you think about it. It means increasing and adding every day something new in your life. In the last while, I've been speaking about immersing your soul in a spiritual spa, just like the body needs healthy diet, rest, exercise, nutrients. The soul also needs. A spa is relaxing. It's calming. Somewhat of a balm to your nerves, to your muscles. So there's a spiritual spa. SPA acronym, study, prayer, action. SPA. Immersing yourself in a new form of cognitive conditioning. Study. That is by studying something new, reading a new book, studying a new text, beginning a new class. Two, emotional conditioning, prayer. A song, a poem, a prayer from the heart. Experience something emotionally spiritual and uplifting that transports you to another time and place. And finally, A of the SPA, action. Behavioral conditioning. Do something different. You give charity, give an extra penny. Give an extra amount. Give it with more intention. Give it with a smile. An extra smile. Other behavioral things. Go Go out of your way to do an extra act of kindness on a daily basis. Share beautiful thought with your contact list. Things that you have not done before, you'll be surprised what that does. That's opening the window. That's fresh air. You're bringing something in out of your conventional system, out of your routines, out of your past habits. They may be good habits, many of them, but you want something new because you want something fresh. That's bringing that which is beyond the system. And that includes also letting go, because you're letting go of your past behavior, even past, I'm not talking about negative behavior, bad habits, but even good habits. You're going beyond them, and that in turn opens up the beyond from heaven itself, from the higher places itself, to introduce new experiences, new blessings, new channels. The difficulty is, frankly, not the concept. Everybody can understand this. It's doing it, implementing it. Because tomorrow morning, you go right back to your routines. That's what we gravitate to. It's very difficult to break a habit. The Power of Habit a few years ago was a bestseller, because habits are what the brain does when it sees you repeat something many times. So the brain creates a macro. Think of it as an algorithm. And when you wake up in the morning, you go to the sink, you wash your hands, then you brush your teeth. Sometimes you don't even remember, because the brain wants to reserve resources for when it's needed. So it automatically puts things into automatic pilot. And then when you want to change a habit like that, the brain doesn't easily adjust, because it's already like plastered in, it's wired in. The way the neurons are fired, that's how they get wired. So it requires now much more effort to get out of that inertia, out of that status quo. Some say it takes 18 times to repeat something until it starts becoming habitual, maybe more. But here it's not just bringing new habits, it's also breaking old ones. So the challenge is going to be maintaining it, especially in the beginning. But once you do, it opens up a new vistas. That's why it's important to do it in a way where you are doing it in things you enjoy. Very hard to assume new things if you're not enjoying it. You should have pleasure. That's why studying something you really enjoy. Yes, at times we have to do something even though we don't like it. You know, you see athletes train, musicians train. Nobody likes the training part. It's hard. It's strenuous. It's a lot of exertion. But you look at what it's resulting in, that discipline. But imagine you also enjoy it. That's why it's important to be like a spa, that it should have a certain pleasure in it. I don't mean pleasure as in comfort zone. I mean pleasure as that you enjoy this new experience. Find a new friend. I mean, what is newness if you're not going to do something new? If someone wants to give you a new, fresh gift, and you come with an old basket, with the dust and the past, it'll just pollute the new gift. It'll become part. It's like mixing fresh milk with old milk, or fresh wine with what I would say old wine, because usually it's good wine, but spoiled wine. You don't want to spoil the new with the old. What do they say? You don't want good money to follow bad money. So you need to create a new container, a new attitude, a new approach. That's, my friends, how we get unstuck. How we open up new opportunities. How we propel ourselves forward. It's not even the propelling. It's just freeing ourselves from the past that holds us back. The ball and chain that holds us hostage. And being aware of it is the first step. Because awareness breaks that second darkness. At least know it's dark. At least know it's not in the right place. Know that you have a blind spot and you don't know what the blind spot is. And now seek out to be tied above so you don't fall below. This is a tremendous tool in our lives. And especially this time of the year, the mystics explain that the soul goes like an orbit, like a planet that orbits. And at certain times of the year, this time of the year especially, is when the soul gets closest to its source. There are less layers, less filters, less called blankets, blockages, impediments. So if you allow yourself, you actually can experience something much deeper and higher. The Arizal, Isaac Luria, the great mystic, says that a person in these 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur does not cry, his soul is not complete, or her soul is not complete. Now, crying doesn't always mean crying over pain or over loss or over grief or over a mistake. Crying is sometimes that existential cry that you feel there's more. You just sense there's more. And it makes you cry because it's overwhelming. That's very healthy. The way the mystics or the Kabbalists put it, tears of that sort bathe your soul like a spa. They bathe your soul with a sense of something beyond you, a reverence, an awe of a grandiosity that is beyond our limited boxes. And that in turn is refining and elevating. It's like looking up and you see, oh, wow, how much more there is to go. And it motivates you to want to climb higher. Famous story. Tzemach Tzedek, when he was a little boy, was playing with other children on a ladder. And all the children were afraid to climb to the top. He was the only one that climbed to the top of the ladder. His grandfather, Rav Shneur Zalman, was watching and said to his grandson, why were you the only one that had the courage to climb to the top? So he said, Zaidi, grandpa, simple. When the other children were climbing, they kept looking down. So they saw how high they were afraid to climb higher. They looked down, wow, I'm too high. Afraid of heights. When I was climbing, he said, I kept looking up. And I saw how low I was, so it motivated me to climb higher. We have two eyes, they look ahead. They don't look back. Yes, we need a rearview mirror to review the past, to be accountable, to repair and correct that which we may have overlooked or setbacks and so on. But the two eyes, you look ahead. You look up. When you look up, it motivates you because you see how much more there is to go. In a good way. And looking up, you reach upward. And when you're tied above, you don't fall below. This is the lesson. This is the teaching. Internalize it, and it can transform your life. I want to wish you a very happy new year. A year where you were written and sealed in the book of life, book of health. Abundance materially and spiritually, all with great success and beyond your wildest expectations. Look up. Panoramas, new horizons, new vistas open up and internalize that in your life. This has been Simon Jacobson, Meaningful Life Center, meaningfullife.com. Check us out. Full schedule of programs and events on topics from A to Z. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please share and comment. Feedback, your thoughts, your suggestions are more than welcome. Thank you so much. Again, be blessed. Shana Tova, blessed year.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.